The final case to be heard this morning is number 2008-1285, Nestle R&D Center, Inc. versus William Wilkins, Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner of Ohio. Mr. Froehling.
Thank you, Master Commissioner Mayor. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
This case involves the Ohio Corporation Franchise Tax and specifically how the statute of limitations for filing an application for refund applies to a taxpayer claiming a refundable jobs creation tax credit. Ohio Revised Code Section 5733.0610A is a statute that allows a taxpayer to claim a refundable jobs creation tax credit on its franchise tax return. To decide this case, the court needs to answer two questions. First, the second sentence of 5733.0610A credits the taxpayer with having made a fictional tax payment. The question the court needs to answer is, when did Nestle make its fictional tax payment? The second question the court needs to answer is, when does the 3-year statute of limitations period begin to run for purposes of requesting a refund of this fictional tax payment? Now, the facts in this case are not in dispute, and there's a few key facts I'd just like to restate here for purposes of oral argument. Nestle timely filed its 2001 original corporation franchise tax report on October 9th, 2001, 6 days before the extended due date of that return, October 15th, 2001. At that time, Nestle did not claim a refundable jobs creation tax credit on its return because at that time it was not in possession of a certificate from the Ohio Department of Development's Tax Credit Authority authorizing Nestle to claim that credit on its return. 3 years and 2 months later, on December 6, 2004, the Tax Credit Authority issued that certificate to Nestle, and that certificate conferred upon Nestle a $43,670 refundable jobs creation tax credit. 6 weeks after receiving that certificate, in January 6th or 7th of 2005, Nestle filed an application for refund and an amended 2001 Ohio Corporation Franchise Tax Report for the sole purpose of receiving a refund of its refundable jobs creation tax credit.
Let me ask you a question about the record here. We have a number of these certificates issued, I believe, by the Department of Development, is it?
Correct.
And they refer to an underlying agreement, and I don't think that's in the record, is it?
I don't believe the underlying agreement is in the record.
And that agreement provides for this credit to be granted year after year over a 10-year period.
That's right. The record, there is a number of certificates in the record, one for 2001, one for 2002, 2003, and you're right, this credit was derived from a contractual agreement between the taxpayer and the Ohio Department of Development's Tax Credit Authority, whereby it was a 10-year agreement, whereby if Nestle had hired the appropriate amount of people according to the terms of the agreement, it would be allowed to receive a refundable jobs creation tax credit. Now, as part of that agreement, Nestle would have to file certain annual reports with the Tax Credit Authority to state exactly how many employees it hired and whether those employees were the right type of employees and whether Nestle, in essence, has lived up to its end of the bargain of the agreement. The Tax Credit Authority would verify that information, determine its accuracy, and then issue a certificate.
And so, and you're doubtless going to get to this in the argument, but then your position is that now this agreement exists that would allow the credit all the way through, but your position is that you're not actually entitled to take the credit until that certificate is issued?
That's right. The there are two reasons for that. One is within 5733.0610A, which says that you cannot claim the refundable credit until it's granted by the Tax Credit Authority. And then when you look at 122.17 D, I believe, D7 is actually where it requires the taxpayer to file the annual reports with the Tax Credit Authority the authority verifies it, and then it issues the certificate, which according to 122.17D allows the taxpayer to then claim the credit on its franchise tax report. That's the awarding of the credit itself.
Now the, and I looked at this briefly, but correct me if I'm wrong, for the tax year at issue, there had already been tax payments made.
That's right. Nestle.
That were carried forward, in essence?
Nestle made estimated tax payments on January 31st, March 31st, and May 31st of 2001. It then, and I believe those estimated payments totaled $220,000, something like that. Its actual tax liability on the 2000 report was much less than that, so a balance of its estimated payments were, I believe, carried forward to the next year. They did not claim the refundable credit on the original report, however, because they had not had their certificate. And that's, I think, critical, a critical issue here for the court to decide.
And given that they'd made these payments, then Nestle could not have actually immediately realized the benefit of that credit by withholding the payments because they'd already made the payments.
True, true. They couldn't take the benefit of the credit because they hadn't received their certificate yet, and they didn't know the exact amount of the credit because the Department of Development's Tax Credit Authority needs to verify, you know, the employees that were hired, whether they're the right type of employees at the right jobs, at the right wages, verified the withholdings, and then calculated the refundable credit amount.
Is it usually the practice to submit these claims to the Department of Taxation earlier or before the certificates are issued, or is this case the usual method of claiming the credit?
I can't speak for how other taxpayers comply or not comply. I will say the return instructions to the franchise tax return are clear. The commissioner's return instructions say that the taxpayer must attach their certificate to the return in order to claim the credit. And there's another publication that was issued by the Commissioner's Tax Policy Division, where it says that the credit is authorized by the Department of Development, and the taxpayer cannot claim that credit until the Department of Development has conferred that credit upon the taxpayer. So there's two separate instances where the Commissioner says the certificate is key, and in our view, that is consistent with what's required in the first sentence of 5733.06108, that you're entitled to refundable credit after it's been granted. So we believe the commissioner's right that the taxpayers do need to attach the certificate, and there's no benefits awarded until the certificate has been received. And I think fundamentally, Nestle is here today to ask the court to, one, determine that Nestle's fictional tax payment was made on December 6, 2004, the date Nestle received its certificate from the Department of Development's Tax Credit Authority. And then Nestle is asking the court to rule that pursuant to 5733.12B, the statute limitation statute, and the court's holding in Lancaster Colony v. Lindley, that the three-year period to file application for refund, the three-year statute limitations period, began to run on December 6, 2004 as well. And fundamentally, that's the issue that the taxpayer has with the commissioner's final determination, the board's decision and order. They have ignored the first two sentences of 5733.06108. They've completely ignored the mechanism within the statute that makes this credit refundable as opposed to non-refundable. They've specifically ignored this creation of a fictional tax payment and what that means for purposes of complying with the statute of limitations and the court's holding in Lancaster Colony v. Lindley. In short, the commissioner and the Board of Tax Appeals have read 5733.12b in a vacuum, and that's clear error on that part. The board's decision and order is unreasonable and lawful because of it, and the court should not hesitate to reverse the board in this instance. Now, as I said earlier, the jobs creation tax credit is refundable, and that's really the linchpin to this matter. If it was a non-refundable credit, Nestle would not be here today. But it's a refundable credit, and a refundable credit means that if the taxpayer's tax liability is less than the value of the credit, then by statute, Ohio will refund the balance of the credit to the taxpayer in the form of cash. And the mechanism to make this credit refundable is important to this case. And the mechanism that makes this credit refundable is the creation of the fictional tax payment. And that's the focus of the first question that the court needs to answer here today. And the second sentence of 5733.0610A creates the fictional tax payment. And that reads, for purposes of making tax payments under this chapter, taxes equal to the amount of the refundable credit shall be considered to be paid to the state on the first day of the tax year. So the court needs to determine when such taxes shall be considered to have been paid, and then the tax commissioner is directed to apply those payments to January 1 of the tax year.
But the tax year at issue would be
2001.
2001. So they're deemed to be made or considered to be made as of January 2001. Wouldn't that?
No, the payment is considered to be made when the certificate has been granted. At that time, the second sentence says, at that time, taxes equal to the amount of the refundable credit shall be considered to be paid. So on December 6, 2004, Nestle was awarded a refundable jobs creation tax credit. At that time, Nestle was deemed to have made this fictional tax payment that's credited back to January 1, 2001. Okay. By crediting it back to January 2001, it makes the credit refundable. Now, the answer to when the credit, when the deemed fictional payment has been made lies in the first sentence of 5733.0610A, and that is, the first sentence reads, a refundable corporation franchise tax credit granted by the tax credit authority can be claimed under this chapter, i.e. chapter 5733. So the key word in the first sentence is granted. When did the tax credit authority grant this credit? Well, they granted it on December 6, 2004. And the commissioner agrees with this, as we discussed, with respect to his return instructions and his longstanding directive that it's the Department of Development that grants this credit. Now, applying the fictional tax payment to the taxpayer's facts here, Nestle was granted this jobs creation tax credit on December 6, 2004. That fictional payment was then made on December 6, credited back to January 1, 2001. And prior to December 6, 2004, there was no fictional tax payment made. On December 6, 2004, fictional tax payment made that became illegal, erroneous, and excessive on that date, as those terms are used within 5733.12b, because Nestle had paid their 2001 taxes in full with their estimated tax payments on January 31, March 31, and May 31 of 2001. Because the fictional payment on December 6, 2004 became illegal, erroneous, and excessive on December 6, 2004, the three-year period to request a refund under the statute of limitations began on that date, December 6, 2004. And this, Nestle stated on brief that the court has not considered the first two sentences of 5733.06108 before, but that said, a decision in Nestle's favor here is not provocative in the least. It does not turn the three-year statute of limitations period on its ear, and in fact, a decision against Nestle would turn the court's holding in Lancaster Colony v. Lindley on its ear. And Lancaster Colony is an instructive case here, and the facts in Lancaster Colony are fairly straightforward. Lancaster Colony involved the 1972 tax year. Lancaster Colony paid its taxes in full in May of 1972. And the Ohio Department of Taxation assessed Lancaster Colony additional taxes in April of 1975. Lancaster Colony paid those taxes in full May of 1975, and 10 months later requested a refund of not only the taxes it paid in May of 72, but its taxes that it paid in May of 75 that were credited back to the 1972 tax year. The Ohio Supreme Court looked at this and they said the application for refund was time barred with respect to the payments made in 1972, but it was not time barred with respect to the payments made in 1975. They said that the holding of that case was the statute of limitations begins to run anew with each illegal, erroneous, and excessive payment. And that's exactly what happened here. The statute of limitations for the fictional tax payment began to run on December 6, 2004. If there's no further questions, that concludes my remarks for the time being, and I would like to use the balance of my time on rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Frohley. Thanks. Mr. Schweppe.
morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I'm Alan Schwabe here on behalf of the tax commissioner.
I'd like to begin, if I could, by asking you, does the commissioner agree that this credit is not, that the taxpayer is not entitled, legally entitled, to derive the benefit of the credit until the Department of Development issues this certificate?
I think, Your Honor, the way I'd like to answer that is to backtrack just a second and lead up to your answer, if I could. If you look at the refund statute, 573312, talks about a three-year period in which to claim a refund for taxes that are paid. In previous case law, Coca-Cola, Lancaster, they've said that that three-year period began to run from the time frame that the taxes were paid. In this case, that would have been on October 15, 2001, which was the extended due date.
Well, of course, as came out in the discussion with counsel, even that date is a deemed date of payment in this case, because the payments had actually been made, physically made earlier.
And that is actually to the taxpayer's benefit. That is actually extending it as far out to give them the maximum period of time as would be possible. It was the end of the tax year, the extended date in which to file them. So actually that is working to the taxpayer's benefit, and actually, as they have acknowledged, would give them over a three-year period in which to file for the refund claim. So if you look at the court's prior decisions, they've said that the three-year period is from the time of payment. So in our case, the latest that 3 years begins to run is in October of 2001, which would extend it to October of 2004. Okay. The court has consistently said that it runs from the time of payment. There's nothing in the refund provision, the refund statute, that for this type of a tax credit would extend it or alter that time frame. The legislature is aware, and it could have easily have granted such an extension of time from it. It did not do so in this case.
Let me ask you about that, because you say there's nothing in the statute. Obviously, there would be no refund claim unless there's a payment, which you're focusing on, but the payment, the other element of it is that the payment has to be illegal, erroneous, or excessive.
And case law from this court has indicated that it becomes illegal, erroneous under the provisions of the refund statute as of the date of payment, in which we would ask the court to hold was the latest October 15th of 2001.
That goes back to my initial question to you, though. Does the commissioner agree or disagree with the proposition that the credit, this proposition that the credit, that the taxpayer is only entitled to the credit at the point in time when the certificate is issued?
I think, Your Honor, technically that issue is not before the court, because they did not file a refund application within the three-year period. If they would have filed an application before the expiration of the three-year period in October of 2004, I think that issue would be before the court. They did not do anything. They sat on their hands. So from the commissioner's perspective, that there was no timely refund application filed, and therefore, I think that issue is not before the court at this point in time. To answer your question,
But isn't it necessary to decide the question of whether the statute of limitation had run at the time that they did file?
And I think that from our position, that the fact that they did not file within the three-year period, which is in the refund provision, and there is nothing other within the refund provision that would extend it beyond the three-year period. The legislature could have easily said that the refund period begins to run from the actual issuance of the certificate by the Department of Development. That is not done in 573312. There are other examples in the statutes where the legislature has extended it and indicated when the period does begin to run. They haven't done it in this case. So to be consistent with prior law, in prior decisions of the refund provision, this court has indicated that the three-year begins to run from the dates of the payment, which, being generous to the taxpayer, was in October of 2001.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you're talking about the Coca-Cola case.
Yes.
Now, in that case, it would have been clear, wouldn't it, when way back when the payments were made in 1971 or 72, that case involved the constitutionality of imposing the income approach in the franchise tax. It would have been unconstitutional back when the payments were made. The payments would have been illegal back when they were made. And the contention in this case is that back in 2001, none of the payments would have been illegal, erroneous, or excessive, because it wasn't until December 6, 2004 that would have been triggered. And so doesn't that distinguish this case from Coca-Cola?
And I don't think so, Your Honor, because let me read you syllabus one from the Coca-Cola decision. It says the requirement of RC 573312 that refund applications be filed within 3 years from the date of the illegal or erroneous payment of the tax takes effect as of the date of the time payment is made. It is our position that the payments were made as of October 2001, not when the Department of Development made the determination on the application for the credit. So it was back in reading Coca-Cola, it is consistent with what we have here, that it is, they're erroneous as of the time of the payment. There's nothing in the statute that would extend that or alter that to say that they're erroneous as of the time that the Department of Development issues the credit.
Let me ask you another question. What procedurally, according to the commissioner, what should Nestle have done as opposed to what they did do?
I think one thing would have not been sitting on their hands. Two, would have been filing the refund application. In their brief, Nestle argues that they couldn't calculate the amount of the credit. However, in footnote 2 of our brief, we indicate that Nestle did have all of the necessary information to calculate the credit, because they have to submit that. That's included in the application to the Department of Development. So what they would have needed to do, I think, actually, is go ahead and file that refund application.
But they wouldn't have been entitled, actually, to receive it until much later.
They would have at least had something pending before the Department of Taxation on the refund prior to the expiration of the three-year period.
Is there some statutory provision that requires the department then to hold on to these claims until the certificates are issued later?
I think, Your Honor, that's what I was saying before, is I don't think that issue's before the court, because Nestle did not go ahead and actually timely file. If you adopt the commissioner's position, which is Coca-Cola is controlling, that the time period began to run from the date of the last payment, which was October of 2001. They did nothing within the three-year period. We don't get to that issue. You only get to that issue if they would have actually have done something to have filed a refund claim within the three-year period.
Well, what if they file a refund claim immediately in 2001 and the commissioner issues an order or determination, says you're not entitled to it, there's no certificate, and then they try to appeal to the BTA and they argue, well, we're entitled to it, and they say, well, no, you weren't then, and maybe you aren't even now, because the certificate hasn't issued. Here they've made a claim for something that hasn't matured yet, and they wind up perhaps even losing it procedurally. That's the concern I'm asking about.
Well, I think, Your Honor, I asked my client the same question. This is not in the record. I don't think it's happened, so I don't know what the answer would be. But those aren't the facts that we have here, Your Honor. All we know is that Nestle did not, within the three-year period, do anything. They should have known that under the case law of this court, that the three-year period began to run from the time frame that they made their last payment. They did not do anything. They sat. They waited. They waited until after the Department of Development. There's nothing in the record to indicate what steps Nestle did to try to get the Department of Development to issue within the three-year period. There's nothing in the record. The record is devoid of that type of information. Nestle basically sat on its hands, waited, did nothing, knowing that Coca-Cola is out there, knowing that this court has said under an earlier version of the statute, but that the three-year period began to run from the date of the last payment, which would have been October of 01, and the 3 years began to run. And there's also case law out there that in Coca-Cola says that that period is mandatory and inclusive. There's nothing in the refund statute itself that extends it, that says that that is, there's nothing to indicate to Nestle that anything other than the three-year period began to run in October 2001. We don't have the issues that the court, that they want you to address really before you. If they would have done anything within the three-year period to make the request to try, there's nothing about them trying to get the Department of Development to go ahead and issue it in a timely fashion. The record is devoid there. So from the department's position, you look at it, prior precedent of this court, the three-year began to run in October of 01. Nestle did nothing within that three-year period to request a refund. They sat on their hands, waited. And based upon that, we would request that you affirm the ruling of the BTA that there was no time.
Let me ask you another question about Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola distinguishes an earlier case from this court called Ohio Bell Telephone.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that earlier case, I don't know if you happen to have looked at it recently, arguably contains facts that are pertinent here and involved the public utility excise tax. It involved tax payments that were made. It involved a subsequent order by the PUCO saying, utility, you charge too much. Make rebates to your customers. Those rebates are made to customers. And because of those rebates, it lowers the excise tax. And Ohio Bell goes ahead and says, now we want some of those taxes refund that we paid years ago. Mm-hmm. And the court said that the five-year limitation on the certificate of abatement statute ran not from the time that the original payments have been made, but from the time the PUCO orders have been done. Now, Coca-Cola distinguishes that case because there's an ascertainment provision in the statute, but that provision isn't in the statute anymore. So why doesn't Ohio Bell control this case since we don't have that ascertainment language anymore?
Your Honor, I think, though, that when you go back and look at the earlier version of the refund statute and compare it to the language that we have in our current version, I think the operative language for our cases are the same here, and that it is, as I said earlier, and I can read one paragraph from it says, furthermore, the three-year period deadline is absolute. The language of 573312 is mandatory and all-inclusive. Applications must be filed within 3 years and that must be timely in any event. I think the operative language between the two statutes is the same between the cases, and I think we have a discussion of that point in our brief, and therefore we believe that the three-year period began to run in October of 2001, and Nestle did not timely file an application for the refund.
Thank you, Mr. Schwabe. Mr. Froehling, you've reserved 50 seconds for rebuttal.
50 seconds? I'll make it quick. The commissioner is confusing this credit. This is a refundable jobs creation tax credit, not a non-refundable credit. And I think the fundamental flaw in the commissioner's arguments is that the taxpayer is entitled to a refund of the balance of the credit if its tax liabilities do not support are equal to the amount of the credit. And if a minimum taxpayer that was only had to pay the $50 minimum to Ohio on their franchise tax report received a refundable jobs creation tax credit subsequent to filing the return, there is no illegal erroneous payment to apply against the $50. This is a refundable credit, and the mechanism to receive that credit is the filing of the application for refund within 3 years after the receipt of the certificate. So I think that the commissioner is trying to apply the laws differently as opposed from a minimum taxpayer to a regular taxpayer. The the commissioner's approach here is really thwarting the policy of the jobs creation tax credits. These have been on the books since 1993. The legislative branch and the executive branch favor these credits as they've just moved to extend them further. And if the private sector doesn't have confidence that Ohio's going to live up to its bargain, then the purpose and benefit of these tax credits will be thwarted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Froehling. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
All rise.